The show is about to begin.
Hang in there, it is.
That's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
Featuring Smiley Kaufman.
If you were at a local IHOP at a PGA Tour event, you might see Hideki Matsuyama.
Yeah. Put it up in the stance, strengthen the grip.
His co-host, Charlie Hume.
We've now picked five of the last eight winners on the PGA Tour.
Oh, it's going to hole. Please go to hole. Please go to hole. Please go to hole.
Yes, sir.
And the biggest names in golf.
That's a great question. Can I talk about it?
I don't think I'm ready.
How good does it get, SK?
Why not us, Charlie?
Today, live from the Pinecrest Inn, it's the Smiley Show. So long, everybody. This is the Smiley Show.
Welcome to a special edition of the Smiley Show, where we are previewing the Walker Cup, Smiley, at Lahinch Golf Club in County Clare in the Republic of Ireland. The flyovers are unbelievable. We've got a great episode for you. If you're watching this on Golf Channel right now, you can just keep it locked here through the rest of the weekend, because this is a two-day broadcast, two-day event, of course. On Saturday, September the 5th, you got morning foursomes. Wake up early. It's like watching the Open. Make yourself a cup of coffee from 3:30 to 8 a.m. Eastern. And then afternoon singles from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern. And then on Sunday, morning foursomes are from 3 to 7:30 a.m. Eastern. Afternoon singles go from 8:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern. So
right before football, too, man, like NFL, like you got that. It's like your last Sunday before, you know, you can turn your page to NFL football. And then even Saturday, you can pretty much get it all the way until that 11 o'clock kickoff, or at least 12 Eastern you. I mean, you get a lot of golf in, and you get a lot of you could get a lot of golf in the morning, but also you can watch a lot of golf too. If you're playing golf, throw it on while you're out there.
That's right. You can get one of those little phone holders where you can watch the golf and play the golf.
That's how you do it all together.
That's how you do it. That's the way you do it. I mean, I think this is going to go on a little bit of a tangent right here, but this is the thing we've been trying to pilot on the show for a couple of years now, which is like the morning golf. Like when we go in the fall DP World Tour swing, and this is obviously an event that's being held in Europe, like that, the morning coffee and golf and the switch into football, we need to own that space, Smiley.
Yes. Wait, did I tell you I'm a Premier League guy now?
You sent me a text saying, reacting to a Liverpool goal that I missed early on.
Did you kind of like that I'm randomly just sending like that goal? Expecting that you're also watching the same thing that I'm watching.
That's the way I want it. I remember like when I really got into it heavy when they got the TV contract here, and I like sending out tweets at like 8 a.m. about a Tottenham goal like nobody on earth cares about. But you just want to feel alive. You want to feel like you're part of it.
I was watching the Leeds game this morning. They were playing Brentford, but also catching the highlights of the Chelsea game. They got off to a nice start in the first half.
High scoring.
It's great. Saturday and Sunday morning, it's on. So I like it. I kind of want to get a big board. You know, I'm a big board guy now, and chart and watch every single home game of every team, which I don't know if that's possible for me to do. But if I can come up with a tiered list of my favorite teams, I could tell you like what my favorite FIFA teams are. And I blame, honestly, FIFA for making the default settings being Manchester United, because that's like the team that's my favorite. But I feel like it's the most like New York Yankees answer for an American to say. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm a fan of Man U. It's like, oh, cool, man. Like, you like Derek Jeter too? Yeah. Got it.
Cool. But understandable. Like, and I don't think any American should feel like they have authentic, you know, rooting interests. Like the FIFA thing is probably 95% of us. And we grew up with like Wayne Rooney, Cristiano Ronaldo, Paul Scholes, like all those guys on those teams that were incredible. Understood. But yeah, I tell you what, you can, if the matches aren't on linear television, you can watch every match on Peacock. So this is in your world, buddy. We're going to get you dialed and
right,
we're going to get you a team.
Right in my world. But Leeds
love this for the show.
Is the team that the fellas obviously are watching and cheering for. So I have a rooting interest to watch Leeds. But they had a pretty dang good home atmosphere. That place is – and apparently it's pretty well known for being well supported.
It is. They got some very famous rivalries. That place gets rocking. And they play a very exciting style. Like it's you know, they've had
it's
a couple
feast
of
or famine.
Here.
It's definitely I've seen them in a lot of high scoring games. This kind of goes back and just looking at their history and like how they either played their way off the Premier League and got back up, but it was with goals, which is probably how they were somewhat successful in the Premier League, but also like a reason why they played their way off, but they're back up.
Well, if you showed up for a Walker Cup preview, we are about 5 minutes into introducing that preview. We're just getting in the mood. We're getting in the mood because, you know, this is going to be great. We're able to watch Walker Cup and Premier League soccer in the morning this weekend. It's a great sporting weekend. And so, and if you were one of those people like Smiley and I, you just want to put on live sports as often as you can in your household, like this is a great upcoming weekend for it. So here's what we have for you on today's show, right? We have three guests. We have Ryder Cowan from the University of Oklahoma, who is going to join us to talk about a number of different things, but it is very much the same vibey guy that you fell in love with at the U.S. Amateur at Marion. That's the guy you're going to get to know a little bit better in this interview. We're looking forward to that. We also have the U.S. Amateur winner, Jack Whaley, who's, of course, English, but plays for Florida State, joining us from the airport in London. Got some good London airport rankings upcoming. And then we have TJ Ford, who is the director of operations for Lahinch Golf Club. We're going to watch some flyover videos with him. He won, I believe it's called the South of Ireland Amateur Championship in 2021. Mm-hmm. So he's going to kind of guide us around the place, maybe see some pictures of Jordan Spieth with goats live on the property. There's a lot of fun in that preview that's a really enjoyable one. And like, if you are like Smiley and I, it's like, how fast can I get to this place to play golf here? Because it looks fantastic. So what else do you have to add to this preview, Smiley? Any nuggets you want the people to pay attention to or look out for as we get ready for this Walker Cup?
I think that this, just in general, the Walker Cup is one of the best golfing events that I've actually attended it back in. Oh man, Graham McDowell was on the team, and my grandfather took my brother and I. It was at Ocean Forest, and I remember attending we may have been 8 or 9 years old, give or take. And I just vividly remember how cool it was to like walk the fairways, watch these guys play. I think GB and I actually won that week, but it's going to be so fun to watch on TV, especially at this cool golf course like Lahinch. I hope we get the drone coverage to really show this place off. But these two guys, definitely really excited about being on the team. Also kind of previewing like who some of these guys want to play with. So I thought that was fun to talk about too.
It's truly, I think it's one of my favorite top five, top three sporting events of all sports, like to be on site and watching for. Having gone to the one at Cypress Point last year, Seminole a couple years before, like just the intimacy, the access to watching high quality golf, the venues, it's the best. So I'll tell you what, wake up early with us, get your cup of coffee, your pot of tea, whatever direction you like to go for your morning jolt of caffeine. Tweet us which Premier League game you're watching and try to influence Smiley's team selection. And enjoy the rest of these interviews as you get ready for the Walker Cup this weekend.
All right, guys. Happy to welcome in Ryder Cowan. He is going to be on that Walker Cup team over at Lahinch. Going to be playing at Oklahoma next season. I'm sure you've seen him this summer. Had an incredible amateur season. Ryder, I'm sure it was absolutely a dream come true probably to get that call from Nathan Smith. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's for me, especially like I feel like I played solid my college career, but I never really popped through. I always knew that I could play good golf and I could be one of the best and be on a Walker Cup team and do all that, but I never kind of popped through. And that was kind of one of my goals for this year, coming out of the fall. I was like, that's what I want to do. That's what I should be able to do. And I knew I could do it. So being able to do that it's pretty cool. And, you know, to get that call, it's amazing to be able to go, and compete for the USA and for your country. It's something I'll probably never forget. And I'm excited.
Where were you exactly ranked kind of heading into this summer? What were your expectations? You called it, something that would be a dream of yours, but what were those expectations? How realistic were those, goals heading into the summer?
They were definitely realistic. I think coming out of the spring season unclipped, I think I was like 8 or maybe 11. Wagger, I'm not a leaderboard or like any checker of any kind. So I think I was probably around 15, 16 coming into summer. So I knew I had to have a good summer, but it was definitely something that was in the picture, and I definitely thought about it. But I don't know. I feel like once I get on the golf course, it's like, all right, this is what I have to do. Like I wasn't thinking about it at all on the course, but it was definitely when I got off the course, I was like, all right.
Hello. I was introduced to you at the U.S. Open in that Thursday round. You were one of the guys that were hot on the golf course. You played incredible golf. I remember texting your coach at Oklahoma at the time, Ryan Hibble, who's now, of course, gone to Georgia Tech. But still, Ryan had said that you're just a super confident golfer, really easygoing. And watching you play, it just seemed like a guy who really enjoyed playing, and nothing really seemed to be too challenging to you. It just looked like another day of golf, and it just happened to be at the U.S. Open.
Yeah, no, that's what I try and tell myself pretty much every round I play is like, it is another round of golf. And at the end of the day, it is just golf. Like it's just another golf round. I mean, I've played many in my life before. So even though there's a lot more stakes at the U.S. Open, it felt like almost, but I mean, I was just trying to go out and take it one shot at a time and do my thing. And luckily I played nice kind of all week. I hit it great. And, but yeah, I mean, that was unforgettable week, and it was really fun.
You know, I just was getting ready for the Sunday round. I was at the range kind of watching guys warm up, and Jackson Coivin had just finished his round, had gotten over the putting green. He had played well on Sunday. I think he shot maybe a couple under par. I was like, is that going to be enough? He's like, I don't know, Ryder's still on the golf course. We'll see what he ends up doing this afternoon. So you guys end up tying and sharing that low amateur medalist honors, which is a huge accomplishment, and big congrats to you. But so you knew what the number was of Jackson. You were trying to either beat it or post a similar number to it. What was that pressure like, knowing that the tournament was out of reach, but you were playing for your own prize?
100%. I'm gonna be straight honest with you. So like I said earlier, like, I'm not a leaderboard checker, but when you get to 14 and you hit that tee shot, there's a leaderboard that looks literally straight at you.
Yeah.
And I look up and I saw Coivin shot like 3 under for the day. And I was like, this guy. I mean, I have had to play Coivin my whole entire career, and he has just smoked me. And like, I haven't really, I've got him a couple times for sure, but I'm like, I cannot. This is his last tournament. He's turning pro. Like, I have to be able to like beat this guy. And then I ended up making honestly a really good bogey on 17, or 16, and I was like, well, at least I have a chance. Like, I knew if I made double, I was out. Like,
yeah.
That tee shot was so hard for me. I just couldn't carry that left bunker,
mm-hmm.
and hit in the crap. And I actually made a great bogey and ended up hit a nice shot on 17, making birdie.
Oh, so you birdied 17. How clutch.
I did. But, you know, Coivin's great. He's one of the best people in the world, and I love him to death. But man, I wanted to beat him so bad. there was definitely some added pressure, but no, it was good.
You know, one of the other things that Ryan Hibble had mentioned to me when I was briefly exchanging texts with him when I was watching you early in the week of the U.S. Open was that you were somebody that actually watched Jackson play, and instead of maybe being disappointed or, you know, by losing to him a time or two, you were like, what is he doing? You know, how can I learn from what Jackson is doing and potentially add some of the elements that he brings to his game over to mine? And so I have to ask you, what were some of those things that you learned from how Jackson either plays the game or approaches the game that helped you get the confidence to, of course, have such a great close to your year?
Yeah. First thing I remember is I had a meeting with coach after SEC championship. I played good in the first round, and I ended up playing with Coivin, I think, in the third round. And I wasn't playing very good. I think I was 1 over par. And I told coach, I was like, I really didn't care where I finished. Like, I was playing golf, of course. I was still focused, but like, I really wanted to just watch him and watch what he was doing and like figure out how he was doing this and how he was like, cause he's been number one in the world for a minute and probably one of the best college golfers. I don't mm-hmm. know.
Yeah.
So I was like, I just want to watch him. And I played with him quite a bit, but I never really like studied him and like how he kind of went about things. And I mean, the guy, like it's underrated, but he hits it so well off the tee. Like mm-hmm. he puts himself in so many good positions, and he kind of never gets like up and down. Like, it's just like a, that's a solid, it's always just like a solid round, and he's like never out of his round. Like he's just never out of it. And obviously he putts it so good. It's like he can turn it around like no other. So I was like, that's kind of where I need to strive to get to. I've never been the greatest driver off the tee, and I feel like this last spring I got better off the tee, and definitely my putting, but I don't know. It's just cool. I think it's really cool to just kind of learn and figure out what some of these guys do that are the best in the world. That are, I don't know. Yeah.
You know, I was from watching you play, Ryder, I would say your biggest strength from, if you would have asked me, it would have been the drive, like your driving. And so clearly that's something you've definitely improved on. And you see that a lot on tour, you know, guys that are so consistent, they find more percentages of the fairways, giving them more opportunities, of course, to make birdies. I still feel like that's one of Scottie Scheffler's biggest strengths that probably people don't talk about enough is how accurate he is off the tee for a guy that has length. It's like 64-65% of his fairways on tour. So to your point about Jackson, that's an easy way kind of to stay in rounds. And back to the Oklahoma connection here a little bit, because there's another PGA Tour player I want to talk about, and that's Chris Gotterup. He's a player that played at Rutgers for 4 years, transferred over to Oklahoma for his last year, and he's come on this podcast, Ryder, and he's talked about his experience at Oklahoma and the wind, how much it helped him, and then, of course, being coached under Ryan Hibble. But one comparison I want to make from Chris Gotterup to you, and it's not that Chris Gotterup's a linebacker and you're not, but this is the comparison I want to make, is that you both, to me, are left aimers. Chris Gotterup is a guy that I think is an ultra left aimer. I don't think anybody aims quite as left as he does. But I watch your setup, and you pretty much you'll stand up and to the left. Is that something that you've always done, or is this kind of a technique that has developed over time to kind of help you with your more consistent ball striking?
Yeah, I think it's definitely developed over time, and for just me being more consistent. So I came to college, and I was kind of a drawer of the golf ball. Well, I say I was kind of. I was the drawer of the golf ball.
You're slinging it.
Yeah, I had bad days, like I would have a heavy left miss, and I hated the heavy left miss.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, all right, this is what I need to do off the tee. Like I cannot miss this ball left off the tee, because if I miss the ball left off the tee, then I'm in shambles. So I started like kind of hitting big, or not big cuts, but just cuts. And I don't know, my feet just kind of like, my feet get really left. And my face, like, I don't ever really watch my swing. I'm someone that's not technical. Like, I've never really had a coach. I've never really, like, I don't watch my swing a lot. As long as it feels good and it goes straight, I'm good with it. But, yeah, my feet just get left. And now it kind of just allows me to open up and be able to feel like I'm not going to miss it left. And
yeah,
I don't know. But, yeah, it's definitely a technique that happened over time. But
it's an Oklahoma thing,
different.
Man.
It's different for sure.
There's something going on there in Oklahoma with that, because I was, you know, sitting there watching. I was like, what does this remind me of? And I was like, oh, Gotterup does that. Bubba Watson does it if you reverse it to the other side. But, yeah, I never really, especially on holes that had trouble left, you're up there just slinging it and not worried. To me, it looks like you're not concerned at all about it going left.
Yeah, that's a good thing for me, is like I can step over a ball and I can feel like it's when I'm hitting it great, like I can feel like I'm never going to hit it left.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a strength for me for sure. And it's really helped out my driving, because my driving was never that good. So, it's definitely helped me out.
Well, so let's go back to the USAM, which was only a short couple weeks ago. It was at an amazing golf course in Marion, and there was a big old playoff. It was a 16 for 11 that happened on, I believe, that Wednesday morning, and you were a part of it. You were at that plus two number, and you go out, and actually you whipped out for a hole in one at 13. I don't know if you're aware of that. Actually, that might have been Whaley that whipped it out.
That was Whaley that whipped it out.
Okay. Yeah. But you made a two though, right? Didn't you?
I hit it to like this, and yeah, then okay. like literally a half a foot. And then he goes right after me and like lifts
That's
it
what
out.
It was.
And I was
That's
like, okay.
Was.
Like, I mean, I just, and just show me up. Why don't you? But no, it was funny.
So for all 11 of those spots, I'm sure that every single one of you are thinking like, I just want to make it to match play. I don't care like who I get paired against, except actually I don't really want to play Miles Russell. That didn't sound all that great. But of course, like, we had this like huge matchup in the round of 64 between you and Miles, and it kind of reminded me a little bit too of the U.S. amateur that happened at Cherry Hills, where Gordon Sargent and Nick Dunlap got paired in the round of 64. And we've seen it in other past years too, where you just get these this huge matchup to start the USAM, and it was between you two. Miles was kind of the talk heading into the USAM with all the success, of course, he's had throughout this season, whether it be an amateur golf or professional golf, and still being in high school. And you guys had a great match. And before we kind of get into the match, I think the story that nobody talked about, that nobody knew about, was that you only had two golf balls before you showed up to the first tee unknowingly. Come on, man. What are we doing? That's like, that stresses me out like crazy. I can't imagine standing on that second tee shot and knowing that I only had two golf balls.
Yeah. It was, so before that, like, I had to grind my butt off to get into the playoff. Like, I was six over par for 20 holes.
Oh, wow.
And, grinding my butt off, ended up getting through the playoff, and yeah, I had Miles. But that morning, so like, we were going to switch hotels. Our hotel wasn't great. It was not very good. And we're like, all right, well, I'll go play this playoff and then we'll figure it out from there. And got through, and we're like, all right, well, I tee up at 2 o'clock now, and we just played a playoff at 8. So we have a lot of time. I'm like, we'll go switch hotels, got everything, switch hotels. And I'm like, all right, I knew I only had one or like two golf balls in my bag. And I was like, I'll just put balls in my bag when we switch hotels, like it'll be fine. Got to the hotel. Totally forgot. Had like three boxes of balls right there sitting on the desk. And I was like, okay. But
did you not,
yeah,
did you not like putt before the round? And do you just normally just take two golf balls out? Like, there wasn't a moment, or did your caddy hand you the golf balls maybe?
No. Like, we got on the highway to go, like, I was already a little bit late because it kind of took a minute, and we got on the highway. We were like halfway there, and a lot of different words came out of my mouth, but I was like,
Wait, did you realize it?
Oh, yeah. Halfway there, I was like, oh my God, I literally forgot golf balls. I forgot golf balls to go play Miles. And my mom was like, well, I mean, we can go buy golf balls in the pro shop. And I was like, I'm buying golf balls. I was like, they probably have logos on them too. I was like, I'm not playing a logo. And
I love it.
It was fun.
No thanks to buying balls in the shop.
I knew I had two golf balls, and one was brand new that I hit one shot with it in the morning, and I was like, it's fine, I'll be all right. But it would have been a problem. It would have been a problem if I, you know, hit a little right ball on two for sure.
I mean, I just think about how long the rough was during the week. There's maybe a couple different spots that you could end up hitting in the water. I think of like the ninth hole. I saw some guys hit in the water on 11 kind of throughout the week with that fairway being soft. But I guess if you think about it this way, if you lose two golf balls, you're probably losing to Miles Russell, you would think, right? Is that kind of your logic?
Yeah, that's literally what I told Brian. I said, if we need more than two golf balls, then we're probably going to lose. So, I mean, it is what it is. but, I mean, I don't know. I would have definitely, like, if I would have hit it in the creek on 5, you would have definitely seen me down there, like, trying to get the golf ball out.
Yeah, I could see you guys trying to fish something out. Or even if you lose one, you tell your caddy, hey, you know, why don't you just kind of go fish some balls out in the water just in case. You might go play a waterlogged golf ball coming down the stretch. luckily, you didn't need it. And the highlight of the match was on the 17th hole, where I actually think, and I want to get your perspective on this. So you're long left of the green at the 17th hole, and you try to play the perfect shot, comes up just short. And if you've seen the highlight, it's great. You just basically play this little take the legs out underneath this little shot that's about 15 feet away. It's on the green, goes in the hole for a par, and Miles still has a putt left. But when I look back at that situation and look at the video, I actually was wondering, how close do you think it was for who was away? And did y'all actually determine who was away in that scenario? Because it kind of changes everything if Miles has to go first and then you chip, because then now he would have had a chance to maybe putt with a little less pressure. Was it like clearly you were away in that situation?
Yeah, I think I was probably about 4 or 5 feet longer than he was. Yeah. So
we were dealing with camera angles. And I was like, man, because I'm thinking back later, because it changes everything if it's even close, right?
No, seriously. No, it does for sure. Yeah, I was probably 4 or 5 feet farther. But yeah, that first chip, I mean, I literally tried to do the same thing on both of them.
First, it was impossible.
It was literally impossible. I mean, it was like, I was sitting there, my first lie was absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm literally going to just try and smoke it and like just pop it and see if it'll come out. And it didn't. I was like, well, I kind of expected that, but, I mean, if I didn't hit it perfect, then I was going to have 30 feet for par anyway. So mm-hmm. I was like, might as well. But no, that second chip was, yeah, that's definitely one I'll never forget there. But
yeah, it was one of the best, honestly, one of the best moments of the week. Just happened on a Wednesday, taking out the heavyweight Miles Russell. Of course, you guys are going to be teammates. Is there anybody that you're kind of thinking about that you want to play with? Is Captain Nathan Smith? I don't know if you'll want to give that information away, but is there a player that you would love to play with in this upcoming Walker Cup?
Yeah, I mean, I know some of the guys I've played with my whole life. So, I mean, it's honestly, I'll be good with anyone. I'll love to play with anyone. But, I mean, I've played with Preston my whole life. Mm-hmm. Literally, I grew up playing like tournaments in Texas with Preston. It was like just me and him just grinding it out there when we were like 13. So, I love Preston, and I've said it before, but Miles, he's probably gonna go with T-Dub, but Miles is such a good kid. Like I love Miles to death. And we had a nice match, and we didn't really say any words to each other that day, but, but no, he is like actually one of the best kids that I've met. And I mean, he's so young too. I mean, he's only like 17 years old. Like this kid's like, he acts like he's 35. I'm like, I don't even know. Like when I was 17, there's no chance.
I certainly can't relate to the level that he plays at 17 years old. And just, you know, he practices and plays like a professional. I was nowhere near that at 17 years old. So you definitely have a great teammate in Miles. And of course, T-Dub being Tyler Watts, being the other really talented lefty going to Tennessee next year. So I look forward to watching you guys this coming week, I should say, at the Walker Cup of Lahinch. We've already done our preview that's going to come out later in this episode, kind of hole by hole with the Flyovers of Lahinch. And so I'll leave you with this. Have you seen the Flyovers of Lahinch? What do you know about this place?
No, I'm going to have to watch this video.
It is unbelievable. It is great. The only piece of advice I have for you is that, of course, you're going to have plenty of spectators out and about watching you play. It's a great little town that kind of cozied up to the golf course. But goats, this is what I'm hearing. Goats. This is what I've heard from Jordan Spieth, is that the goats in the area, which this is a part of the logo at Lahinch, they walk around out and about. They've kind of followed the group. So you might have a really? Goat be the standard bearer for your match at the Walker Cup, which is pretty cool.
I love it. I love it. No, I've heard it's a great, great track. I mean, I went over there for Palmer Cup this summer, and I mean, Ireland's great. We played Tralee, but it'll be a few hours away. But I was talking to Coivin, and he said Lahinch is insane.
It looks so good, man.
I'm excited. It'll be a fun week, and hopefully we can pull away and come out on top up there.
I could tell you that Charlie Holm and I are very, very jealous that you get to play Lahinch before us, and then you get to do it for a Walker Cup. So congrats on making the team. Congrats on a great summer. Best of luck at the Walker Cup, and then, of course, in the rest of your Oklahoma career. Look forward to watching the pro ranks soon.
Thank you, Smiley. I appreciate you. I appreciate you guys having me on. So
thanks, Roddy.
All right, guys, we have Jack Whaley joining us now, the most recent U.S. amateur champion, as punches ticket. Not only to the Walker Cup that we're going to talk about in this episode, but also to the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, and of course, the Masters upcoming year. Jack, you had a lot on the line at Marion that day, trying to win a U.S. amateur, but it's hard not to think about those other three that I just mentioned to potentially play in those high-level pro events. I mean, what were those nerves like that day, man? Because it sure didn't look like you had them from what I could tell.
Yeah, you've got the nerves, you know. There's a lot on the line, but I do think that the semi-final match was I felt the most nervous in the semi-final, just because knowing if you get to the final, you got the majors. So yeah, the final was kind of, it wasn't too bad. It was just go out there and have fun, and you kind of got the things that you really wanted. The major starts, but now you're just trying to win the USAM, you know. So it made it a lot easier that. We already had them things confirmed, really. So,
Jack, what was your takeaways of Marion? I thought it was so interesting how that golf course played out. You know, those 18 holes, they were just so different, right? The first six were so unique. The next, I should probably say more like seven holes up to about 13 were really kind of simple and pretty easy for the most part with a lot of wedges. And the last five were just so difficult. Have you ever played a golf course that was just that unique in the way it kind of flowed throughout the day?
No, I don't think so. I think normally you have kind of the hard holes are kind of randomly placed out, and the easy holes are just kind of like fill in between. But it felt like at this one, it was like, right, you kind of got an easy way to lead into it, and then you had a couple of opportunities, and then towards the end, it was like, right, just hang on for dear life. So yeah, it was. And almost like a new experience kind of playing a golf course where the last five holes were the hardest holes in the course, because it's not normally like that. So, but I also mm-hmm. think it was great for match play. You know, it was a lot of opportunities to either win holes with pars and even sometimes bogeys, you know, so.
Oh, Jack, you gotta go a little bit in depth for me here, because I think a lot of people have talked about your win and they don't know what you had to face throughout that entire day. Not only could a bee slow you down, a lot of people don't know that you got stung by, was it a bee on, I think it was the fourth hole walking down the fairway?
I think it was a wasp.
Was it a wasp? Even worse.
Yeah.
You see, a stinger couldn't slow you down.
Yeah, so.
What happened there?
Yeah, so I'm walking to my third shot, laid up on the par five on hole four, and just walking down the rough towards my ball, and I felt something like, stick into my leg. I was like, what is that? Turn around, look down, and the wasp was hanging out my leg with a stinger inside me. I'm like, what is this? I flicked the wasp off and had to pull the stinger out. So that was probably the first for me, you know. I've never had that on a golf course, and I was like, okay, that actually hurt, so now I need to get something done to it.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what you want on a final of a USAM, is you get stung by a wasp for the first time. That's kind of a nightmare. And then And only a couple holes later, a downpour ensues, and you hit the ball out of bounds on the sixth hole, which I didn't even know there was OB over there. And I'm thinking, man,
yeah,
like I know it kind of happens with when it starts getting raining like that. You can easily hit just one where the water kind of just caused the golf ball to squirt out to the right. But I was impressed, Jack, that the fact that you were able to kind of really settle in after that. I think it would have been easy for you to get spinning a little bit. Did you feel like, you know, kind of getting that ball in the fairway on six, even on that provisional, and then also just kind of falling back into a good rhythm? Did it kind of surprise you how quickly you were able to hit some good shots following all that?
I think it was kind of like honestly, it felt like a confidence booster, because it felt like, well, that was probably not going to happen again. And that was about as bad as it was going to get. So it can only get better from there. So, I mean, probably came at a good time, you know, earlier on instead of later on. So I'm kind of glad it happened then than on the 14th hole or the 13th hole, you know. So
what were your expectations, Jack, actually for the Walker Cup? Like when you're going into that, let's say even the semifinal or the final match, you were saying all the right things as far as just not expecting to be named to the team. But internally, did you feel like even when you made it to that semifinal match, did you feel like you had done enough to make that team? And of course, winning the USAM, you were a shoe-in. But how close did you feel like you needed to do, or how well did you need to keep playing to play your way onto this team?
Yeah, I think obviously before that week, there was no expectations of being able to get on the Walker Cup, or felt like I should be on the Walker Cup, you know. And I think it was just for me was to go out there and prove that I was good enough in match play to be on that team. And I grew up playing match play, and I think it was a great week to demonstrate it and utilize that opportunity to potentially get a spot. So I definitely thought by the semi-final that I had a pretty good chance of getting the call up. And then obviously when I won it, I kind of just made it a little bit, kind of just confirmed it really for me.
I tell you what, I'll bring Charlie in here and he's going to love this, because one of my favorite parts about that final match, it wasn't the wasp. It wasn't just the putt at the 18th or the 15th hole that he made, but it was that Jack might be joining some elite company, Charlie, and that him and Aaron Rye are the two Englishmen that feel comfortable playing in rain gloves. Jack, when he got these rain gloves on, he went into stealth mode, man. Like, he was so locked and dialed in. When I get these rain gloves on, especially the double, I mean, it's hands on the steering wheel and I'm gripping 10 and 2 and I'm white knuckling. Jack, dude, you were striping with the rain gloves, man. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was kind of a new thing for me. You know, I'd never really done it because I've never really had the opportunity to be able to do it, you know. And the only times I ever wear them is really cold. Yeah, the only time I ever wear them is if it's really cold and raining, you know, and keep my hands a little bit warmer. So don't really have much experience using double gloves, but it felt as if they were a lot, obviously they're a lot thicker, the gloves. So I was like, right, well, I'm going to have to move my fingers a little bit just so they can fit on this grip. And it felt like my grip was so weird and it felt uncomfortable, but it was just like, just trust it and see what happens. And it somehow worked. So.
Jack, if you enjoyed it, I have a rain shorts idea I can pitch you on after this interview. A very elaborate thing that we're trying to grow in the world of rain gear. So just stay tuned for that. But I'll say the segue there from Smiley is nice, talking about two English players, because we are here. You are part of a Walker Cup preview, and I love this competition so much. Maybe, you know, one of my favorite, if not my favorite, golf competitions, and was lucky to be at, you know, both the Walker Cup at Seminole and the Walker Cup at Cypress Point, and watch a lot of really good English players, you know, both play there, but kind of land themselves on a map looking forward, where you've seen these guys play and succeed at the tour level now. You know, I can remember Alex Fitzpatrick playing Pearson Coody in singles matches. And then last year you had Tyler Weaver and Jackson Coivin, Luke Poulter played matches against both Mason Howell and Preston Stout. As you're looking forward to this Walker Cup at La Hinch, is there a guy you want to play? Is there a match you're looking forward to as you get to kind of cement your place in the history of this amazing competition?
I'd love to take Preston on. That'd be quite fun. Love to be the underdog in that one. I'd like to play Jay again, you know. Jay's a great guy. I think we had a great time out there, and he might want a rematch, so that might be a good one.
Jack, what do you know about La Hinch?
Obviously, we know a lot more now because we've been sent quite a few details on it, and obviously my coach Jones, he was out in Ireland for the Palmer Cup, and he went and played La Hinch, so he's told me a little bit about it, and just kind of hearing it from other people's perspectives. So. I don't know much about it. I've never been, so it's going to be great to go and see it. But I'm on my way there now, so I'm sure we'll have enough time to have a look at it before we start. So
we watched the flyovers as part of a preview for this episode, and we were blown away. Like, get us there on the next plane. We cannot wait to play there. You know, as we kind of get to the latter half of this interview, and hopefully get people to get to know you a little bit past your USAM win. What are some of the places you played, maybe in the British Isles growing up or England, some of the fondest memories you have on courses in that area? Because we've asked this question to Tommy Fleetwood and Bob McIntyre now, of like some hidden gem places. What are the places you grew up playing that you enjoyed the most?
In terms of what I grew up playing, I mean, I played pretty much all the golf courses in Yorkshire, and we've got a great county for golf. We got like Moortown and Allwoodley and quite a lot of places over that in that area. And then obviously I play at Rotherham, which the greens are unbelievable, and it's not too long golf course. It's tree lined and it's good fun. And then if you're going bit broader and going kind of down south, I mean, Royal St George's, it's a big name, but that's a great golf course. And then you've got West Lancs are all really, really solid on the west coast. So I think it just all depends what you like. You know, if you like links golf courses, we've got that 100%. We've got them. And then if you want to go more into a Heathland, Parkland golf course, I mean, we've got some of the best as well. So I don't really have one specific one, but I'm fortunate enough to play a lot of good ones.
Hey, Jack, I got to give Trey Jones a lot of credit because he's bringing in some dang stud recruits out of Florida State, and he's developed plenty of great players at Florida State. The list kind of goes on with Brooks Koepka, Daniel Berger being the guys that I've kind of played with. And then you got the guys that are coming out now with players like Luke Klann. And he actually, when we interviewed him last year, he said, look out for Jack Whaley. And here you are, won the USAM. So he definitely some big things from you coming forward. But also in that answer, I was kind of hoping that with the question that Charlie asked, as far as who you wanted to play. I was kind of hoping for a little Seminole on Seminole action with the future stud and Miles Russell.
Oh, yeah, Miles. Yeah.
I'd like to watch that one.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that'd be a good one. And if I could play with Tyler as well against Miles, that would be even better. So, yeah, I'd like that.
Yeah, Tyler Weaver, another great stud. So, a lot of good stuff at Florida State. Y'all's team is in a great spot. We really look forward to watching the Walker Cup this week. I think it's one of the best viewing experiences that we get, Charlie.
Yeah, and I can't let Jack go without where we started before this interview and kind of the run-up here, the prep session, where you're currently in Stansted Airport. I looked this up. I didn't realize this. You know, we think the New York metropolitan area, there's like three airports. London has 6 international airports, all right? Heathrow, Gatwick, Stansted, Luton, City, Southend. You're in Stansted right now. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Maybe not having the best time there. Can you give us your off-the-cuff London airport rankings? Like, what's the – I'm a big Heathrow guy myself. I want to hear from you, Jack. Give me your London airport rankings.
Oh, I mean, the only one that I ever like going to is Heathrow. So it's Heathrow number 1 and the rest can be at 6. I don't care.
I love it. Big Heathrow pod here. Big Heathrow guys here. All right.
Sure. Oh, man.
And where are you headed to next? How quickly do you get over to La Hinch? Are you headed there now?
I'm heading there now. Yeah, I'm with Tyler. Tyler's just, I think he's just gone to the shop somewhere. So me and Tyler are flying over now.
Good Fantastic. Stuff. Well, good. Best of luck, man. We look forward to watching you guys and hope to see you soon. Congrats on the USAM. And actually, you know what? We'll see you at these dang major championships because you earned it, brother. Congrats.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys, we have spoken to the players. Now it is time to preview the golf course of La Hinch Golf Club for the upcoming Walker Cup. And today we're joined by TJ Ford, who is the operations manager and also quite the player. TJ, I've done some little bit of recon on your golf game. Tell you what, I'm impressed. How's the game these days, CJ?
It's trending quite poorly at the moment, I would say, given everything that's going on here. But not too bad in general. I played in the south of Ireland, which is kind of our amateur event that we have here every year, our amateur championship. And this year it was an amazing field with a lot of the GB and I guys coming over to get some prep in for the Walker Cup.
Oh, cool.
And I qualified well and then was beaten in the first round of match play, which has kind of been how things are going for me for the last while, but no, it's great. We're really excited for everything that's going on. There's a lot of building going on just behind me here.
That's awesome.
So really looking forward to next weekend.
Yeah, I'm doing a little bit of research. It was that South of Ireland Amateur Open Championship that you won in La Hinch back in 2021. So you have not only won that event, but you've won at La Hinch. So tell me what it's like to compete at this golf course. We're going to get into some flyovers here briefly as Charlie's going to kind of walk us through some of these holes and you and I are going to speak about it. But I'm obsessed with this place, TJ. It looks incredible.
Yeah, it is. It is, to be fair. I mean, you know, objectively, it's obviously I'm biased, but it's ranked very highly. It's a really good match play course. A lot of our kind of history in the club is based around match play. It's a course that requires, you know, I would say more precision than kind of bomb and gouge in general. So it's going to be a really exciting test for the guys that are coming over.
Well, I mean, we're taking a look at one of our first flyovers here. So, Trevor, why don't we go back on this front nine? I'll even bring you in here just to kind of briefly kind of set up just the history and what you've learned about La Hinch. And there's some pretty good course designers attached to this place.
Yeah, that was, if you're watching on YouTube, you just saw the 12th hole. And the reason we arrived at the 12th hole was because when we were prepping for this interview with TJ, we decided, hey, we're going to try to narrow this down, keep this tight, and do 3 holes on the front, 3 holes on the back to preview this. 4, 5, and 6, 13, 14, 15. And then Smiley and I dug in to the file folder of flyovers. And we're like, this is not enough. We are going to need to see all 18 holes, maybe 3 or 4 times. This place is absolutely gorgeous. And the history, as Smiley notes here, is it maybe set the table for us there, TJ, is old Tom Morris and Dr. Alistair McKenzie, who designed La Hinch. And it's funny because we're coming from a Walker Cup last year at Alistair McKenzie course in Cypress Point. So give us a little bit of the background there on how that design comes together and the two of those working together that are godfathers of golf course architecture.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you probably couldn't script two better two better architects to come together. And, you know, quite rare. There isn't too many courses out there that have those two names associated to them. So we're you know, 1892, Old Tom arrives in the late, a couple of years after that, designs a couple of holes on this side of the road where the old course is now, and a few on the far side of the road where the castle course is. And then over the course of the next kind of 30, 40 years, Dr. Alistair McKenzie arrives, and eventually we get all 18 holes on this side of the road. And pretty much as we've seen it now, I mean, the two holes that we're going to talk about, the fourth and the fifth, are, you know, original Old Tom Maris, have never been touched. A lot of the other ones have been, you know, small tweaks here and there made. We had Martin Hawtrey in the early 2000s come and do a big job on the course. But those two holes are, you know, they're very quirky. We'll see them in a couple of minutes' time. But, yeah, they're kind of unique to La Hinch and certainly to Lynx Golf. And they're probably something that you mightn't have seen before. Yeah.
Shall we start here with the fourth? This is, I believe it's called Klondike. This is a par, a 475-yard par five, correct?
Yeah. So, it's quite a short par five by today's standards, really narrow fairway. So you'll see the guys play this probably a couple of ways. You know, there's banks on both sides. If you want to just pause it there for a second. Yeah. So there's banks on both sides that you can use to kick the ball in. It might only be a two iron.
It's
or
so narrow.
Wood.
I mean, look at that fairway, dude. That's so good.
So you can kind of, you lay up to just behind the hill, the Klondike Hill, and then you're hitting a blind, what's maybe a five or six iron for these guys over it. What you'll probably see, especially if it's downwind, is a lot of guys take driver and smack it over there to the right of the fairway to get a clean shot into the green.
Uh-huh.
But the risk
like over here, where these or more, okay, in the general area. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so you're right at 300 yards to the base of that hill. So that's kind of around where they're carrying it, but they'll go right and hit, you know, maybe a nine iron or a wedge if they get a good lie and avoid those bunkers and a lot of the marram grass that's around there.
Where's the predominant wind?
Downwind on that hole, yeah, coming off.
Oh, so they're sending it over this thing, yeah.
Yeah, and actually during we had the Arnold Palmer Cup in 2024 and Gordon Sargent played in that, and a lot of those guys were just driver straight over the top of the hill. The hill wasn't even there.
Wow.
For them. I think Sargent was nearly in this bunker that you see way up nearly greenside, which is like
stop on a par five
20 yards
right up here on the right this right side here. Wow.
Yeah. Pitch and putt.
Wow.
But that was a strong wind, you know, so I think you'll see guys either hit two irons into the fairway or take the risk and go out the right. But it's a great match play hole, you know, and especially if you know, depending on what your opponent does in front of you, obviously you kind of make your decision and go there. But we have what we call a hill man. So on the top of this hill, we have a guy who stands there all day, every day, because the 18th crosses the other way. So he's got a red flag and a green flag.
Uh-huh.
And, he's kind of our traffic, you know, traffic control man. So if people are walking up the 18th, you get a red flag. And
There he is.
There's our hill man.
In his little hut.
Are there Klondike bars in there too? Just asking for a friend. Yeah. TJ, are you familiar with that, or is that a U.S. thing?
No, the ice cream bars. No.
No, they're just Klondike ice cream bars. It's like a brand. I don't think it's spelled the same, but still, it'd be nice to get a little ice cream on the way through the fourth hole.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. So that's a unique job to La Hinch. I mean, there's kind of one of one hill man in the world, I think.
That's so
but
good.
But it's a cool feature.
You know, kind of seeing one, two, and three, and then get to this fourth hole. Two was kind of interesting, too, because you kind of make your way back into town, which is very odd for like a second hole. Typically, you play out in a lot of these links types of golf courses. So I was almost confused when I was looking at it, Charlie, because I was thinking in my head, is this number two here? Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of times, this looks like a 16, 17, or 18
look
as you are kind of coming back into town. But it was like a double dogleg par five. Is that safe to say here, TJ?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you're kind of hitting over those bunkers on the left, and then provided you're on the fairway, you might have kind of a five iron left in. But yeah, I mean, we're kind of, you know, regarded, I suppose, as the St. Andrews of Ireland because of the way that the town, you know, interacts with the golf course here. I mean, we're 50 yards from the main street here, over the back of that green. So, you know, it's you finish up the 18th green and you stroll into town and, you know, you have a pint up the village. It's quite unique to La Hinch, you know.
As operation.
Sorry, I was just curious on the town piece. If it is a feel like St. Andrews or North Berwick, where people are walking amongst the course and walking dogs and things like that, is there a feel like that there, Lahinch?
Yeah, there is. I mean, the majority of the people that come to Lahinch in the summer, a lot of them are there to play golf. So there's a good buzz around the village. You see people walking up the street with their golf clubs. So yeah, it is. It is. We don't have the kind of public park aspect of it like St. Andrews does on a Sunday, but yeah, I mean, it's a key part of the village, and we have a great relationship with everyone up the town as well. You know, it's brilliant.
Is the fifth hole the par three? Okay, because this
I was like looking for. Hole.
I'm telling you that it took me a very long time to figure out, where are we going here? Is this a par four? And I was like, oh my God, there's a green. And it was just the most bizarre green that's just in between these mounds. If this green gets downwind, I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, so it's quite short. You know, it's only 150 yards to the middle of the green. So, you know, 9-iron or wedge. But the prevailing is typically into. So you could hit anything from a 5-iron in.
Oh, wow.
It can't be tricky there.
Oh, man.
It kicks in from short and generally kicks back from long. But it's another unique hole. You know, I think it's obviously so very quirky cool. And it's quite polarizing, but like the anticipation, hit your shot and you're walking up around the hill waiting to see where your ball is. Like, there's nothing like that in the world. You know, it's a great feeling.
And TJ, I see this little white rock, this white stone here on the tee, and there's also one. It's correct that this is where it notes where the hole location, the flag location is that day, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So it moves on the hill depending on where the pin is, moves every day.
Cool.
And yeah, there's an old, I mean, a lot of people will know this story, but there used to be a lot of holes and ones on this hole because you'd get caddies going up, acting as a four caddy up around the green. And the ball would come in, and if it was anywhere near the hole, they'd be jumping up and down and hole in one, and everyone would be celebrating, and then they'd run down and pop the ball into the hole, which, you know, often resulted in quite a nice tip from the guys that they were caddying for.
That's a pro play right there.
Yeah. I mean, it was happening daily, you know, up to now. This is a long time.
A lot of holes in one.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was called Dell, right? And then here... Now at the sixth here, this is called Paradise, I believe, and this is a par four, TJ.
Yeah, par four, strong par four. So you're hitting, I mean, it's 260 to kind of run out. You're hitting it like as close to 260 as you can without going 261 into that bunker, running down into that hill. You know,
right. So this one right here, this cavernous one right here. Yeah.
Exactly. The one that's looks like an asteroid ended up in the bottom of the fairway. That one.
Probably that one. That's exactly. The one you don't want to be in.
And it's been expanded a lot over the last winter as well. So the bunker, it used to be really tiny, and it's kind of a bit more built around the shape of that that crevice, as you said. But from there you've kind of got like 160 yards, and it's just try not get distracted by the Atlantic Ocean behind you, and. It's a tricky green with a lot of severe runoffs on both sides. So it's one that, you know, you kind of just need to hit the shot and hit a good one in there, or else you're in trouble.
As we kind of make our way over to the backside, I want to ask you about the Irish Open that was held here. John Rahm won, I believe it was back in 2019. Is that correct, Charlie?
Correct. Yes. I mean, so, and TJ actually had some stats for us in there.
I saw the stats, and I guess my question would be what is the membership, and what have you heard about that Irish Open? And if you were there, what are your memories of just how that event played out and how the best in the world kind of managed this golf course?
Yeah, it was before my time in Lahinch, actually. So I wasn't there that week, but I mean, the fondness that people talk about the members, the local businesses up the community. I mean, it was an amazing week. The weather was amazing. They closed off the streets. They had live music playing up there at nighttime. Big fireworks shows. You know, it was a festival for the week.
Cool.
That was it. And yeah,
that's so good.
I mean, to get John Rahm, you know, he shot 62. He actually bogeyed this hole in the final round, the 13th. But 62.
What a short hole too here. This 13th hole looks like it's just like an iron kind of out there, like a fairway wood, and do the fat part of the fairway, and then just try to play up the hill, or guys kind of try to push up this right side with the driver.
Yeah, it's actually shorter than that, so it only plays about 280 yards to the middle of the green from
from
this tee box that we're over now.
Yeah,
which is the tee box that the guys are probably going to play for the Walker Cup. It's a better hole from there because it is reachable from further back. It's kind of, you're just getting up to the front of it. But I mean, if you miss the screen left or right, particularly left to a left pin, you know, it's really challenging. And that's how John Rahm bogeyed it in the final round. But I think, like, we had scores. Robert Rock shot a 60 that week. He'd have put on the last green for a 59, which thankfully didn't go in. of 100, and the weather was really good, 156 players, only 54 broke par. So the course held up really well, you know, and that's
good.
You know, traditionally, if a links course, if the weather lays down, it's, you know, the guys rip it apart. It was great. Really good.
Which side do you prefer more, the front side or the back? There's a ton of character on that front, but there's some amazing holes on this back side.
Yeah, I think the front nine is as fun, you know, as you'll have on a golf course, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. There's slopes to use. There's different shots, amazing views. The back nine is a little bit more kind of broody. You know, it's a tougher golf course. You got to, you know, really hit the shots, focus. But the two kind of complement each other really well, you know.
Man, I just love golf in Ireland, Charlie, man. Like, when you have dunes that just shape these holes, just in general with links golf, always love having these pop bunkers kind of frame where you're looking at anytime you look at the fairway. And these little, I imagine these little pop bunkers around the green, are those somewhat hidden from the fairway view with those mounds that are kind of shaped short and left and right of the green?
Yeah, a lot of them would be. But yeah, they're just kind of to be avoided at all costs, you know, especially fairway bunkers. I was actually looking through some of those Irish Open stats. And on this hole particularly, you know, it's a clean one-shot penalty if you hit it in that fairway bunker.
One shot.
There's just no getting to the green from there. Yeah, exactly.
And this is the 14th twins par four here. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's to Smiley, to kind of your point on the design, it, especially with Dr. McKenzie involved, it's so interesting to trace, you know, his history as an architect all the way back to his previous job where he was a medic in the Boer War and applied a lot of these camouflage principles to course design, you know, where you're saying it is tough to kind of see certain things off the tee, bunkers, things like that need to be avoided. You are drawn to places that are going to create a harder second shot in. And I think just in the movement of the land, looking back at that sixth hole, Paradise, and just thinking of, you know, they didn't have machinery back then to move the land around. So you have something that is so beautifully natural in the way it moves, and you're just kind of using the features of the land and have this very unique downhill shot. And it's not dissimilar to, we talked on the show recently about like the sixth hole, the par five at Cypress Point, or the 10th hole at Augusta National that, you know, Alistair McKenzie did with Bobby Jones. This massive change in elevation, but that is just very much using the features of the land. And TJ, that is what struck me the most in these flyovers, is just how, you know, beautiful and lush the sightlines are, amazing, but how natural Lahinch feels and remains so to this day, it seems.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And like you mentioned six there, but like there's probably no better example of that than four and five, where, you know, we've got these two big hills in the way, we can't get rid of them, so we're just going to hit over them, you know, and that's kind of how they materialize, you know. I agree.
Yeah. And shall we go to the 15th here? This is, as I pull this up here, this is another par four. And this is the hardest hole in the course, correct, TJ?
Yeah, yeah. So usually playing into out of the left. Quite a tough hole, played over par during that Irish Open. So driver is really pinching into this area where the bunker is, which usually means, you know, they'll kind of hit three woods or two irons down there. You know, you might have another one into the green from there because it plays uphill. And this is kind of one of the few greens in Lahinch that you can actually run a ball into. Lahinch is quite unique in that a lot of the greens that we've looked at on the front line they're quite raised. So you need to actually fly the ball onto the green, which is, you know, challenging when you've got wind and rain and a lot of the conditions that typically come along with links golf.
Yeah, TJ, I was actually texting with Jordan Spieth last night. He had played with Hinch a couple years back. Scottie Scheffler was out there along with Sam Burns. And there was a good little crowd following him that day. But not only was it a crowd of people following, but it was also I don't know if it would be called a crowd of goats, but he told me that the goats just kind of are out there and they just kind of hang out and follow the groups. Is that what's the GOAT culture like at Wahitch?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, the logo of the course is obviously the goats, and, you know, the old story is that there was a barometer, you know, to tell the weather in the clubhouse, and years ago the barometer broke, and the secretary manager at the time wrote "see goats" on the barometer, because when the weather is bad, the goats would be in at the clubhouse, and when the weather was going to be good, they would be out roaming the course. So they're kind of our own little. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's always fun. People always get a great kick out of it. The trick is trying to keep them from the halfway house and stop people feeding them chocolate.
Uh-huh.
And that kind of stuff. You know, that's always the challenge.
That's so good. Well, I can tell you that Jordan was, you know, I was telling these guys last night, I was like, well, Hinch looks unbelievable. These flyers look great. And then he chimed in and said, man, that place was just phenomenal. So he also had very high reviews of Wahinch. So there's one more hole we're going to take a look at, the 16th hole, if I'm not mistaken, Charlie.
That's right. Yeah, this is a special Smiley request here.
This was one of my requests. I wanted to see 16.
Okay.
Because I really thought 16 was awesome. It's just a sweet par three that plays, we saw it a little bit early, but plays back towards just unbelievable backdrop here.
Yeah, so that's the Castle course, our other 18-hole course that you can see in behind it.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, downhill par three, probably about 100 and probably to that pin on the back right, and 190 yards, about a 10 to 15 yard drop as well, and just a lot of undulation around the screen. You know, you can get either the right side or the wrong side of it, you know, and find yourself feeding down towards the pin or getting into a lot of trouble.
Yeah, you've told some stories about some of the specific holes that McKenzie and old Tom Morris were able to kind of use the dunes and just kind of take what the land was giving them and make a hole. Is there any other holes or any other stories that have been passed down from these amazing architects that stand out on this golf course from a certain hole that you might be able to share?
God, you're putting me on the spot now, Smiley.
Well, you already the fifth hole was great. I mean, if there was any other features though of this golf course that you feel like would be something that McKenzie and old Tom Morris were able to, you know, kind of use their hands and arms and try to figure out how to get this place looking unbelievable.
Yeah, I think you really see a lot of, you know, McKenzie's principles around the greens. You know, a lot of raised greens, a lot of fall off on them. You know, big ridges and contours on them, and you know, when we brought in Martin Hawtrey kind of in around the 2000s, or when the club brought in Martin Hawtrey, it was really to try and, you know, focus in on those McKenzie principles, because I mean, you name some of the courses that he's been involved in before, and obviously we're trying to follow up on Cypress Point, which hosted the Walker Cup last year, which is a tough task obviously, but I mean, he's you know, probably the foremost architect on a lot of people's minds when they think of golf course architecture. So, yeah, we consider ourselves very lucky to have a course that he was here at. And, yeah, we do our best to try and kind of, play into that and live up to that.
And we saw looked to be a clubhouse to the right of that green. And based on my research, it actually appears that you guys had just reopened the clubhouse from construction. So I imagine, as the operations manager of Wahinch, you've been very busy recently trying to get not only ready for the Walker Cup, but also getting that clubhouse ready to go to welcome, I'm sure, a great crowd into town.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a big project. You know, it took over 2 years. We kind of phased it because we have, you know, we obviously have a lot of golfers coming in every summer that we need to be open and feed and, you know, have merchandise and stuff for. But we're in since the end of May, so it's still new to us. But yeah, I mean, it's fabulous, you know, and there's so much history on the walls. And we actually have the Walker Cup in there at the moment now, which is a massive trophy. It's amazing. So I think people are going to love what they see whenever they arrive.
We need bunk beds in there for the Smiley Show travel endeavor. We need to we cannot get to Lahinch fast enough after seeing this course. And man, I cannot wait to see how this presents on TV for the Walker Cup. Do you have a score prediction, TJ? I feel like you might be a little biased here. Do you think GB and I?
How many
steals
points
one
are available? Let's start there. Is it
10 players on the team? There are let's see. There are
Google research here.
Well, because there are 8 points for the first 2 days and then 10 singles matches. I think I have that correct. So there should be 26 points.
Yeah. So four foursomes in the morning, 8 singles in the afternoon on Saturday, and 10 singles in the afternoon on Sunday. So yeah, your math That's checks right. out there, Charlie. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you going with? Are you going GB and I?
I am. I think. I mean, look, we'd be hoping for a bit of wind. You know, no doubt about it. The American side looks amazing. I think, you know, they're all top 20 in the world on the Wager. But GB and I are equally as strong. You know, I think it's the first time in history that GB and I have had all 10 players inside the top 100 on Wager. And, you know, a lot of those guys were here for the South of Ireland, so they've prepped well. Dean Robertson coming back, having hopefully learned a lot from Cypress Point. So if the weather wins, I think GB and I might just edge them.
There you go.
All right.
There you go.
There you have it.
I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to watching. TJ, when I say I can't wait to meet you one day in person in La Hinch, I really, truly mean that. And Charlie does too, because we're drooling out the mouth, ready to get out there and to get a Klondike bar at the fourth hole.
I want a Klondike bar at the fourth. I want a hole in one. I don't even need to see you go in at the fifth. Yep. And I want to pet and or feed a goat. And if I get to do those three things, my experience will be complete.
And merch.
That's right. Cannot wait, TJ.
Brilliant. Yeah, no, thanks, right, TJ, thanks for having me. And yeah, we're really looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you. Best of luck next week. We look forward to watching.
Cheers, guys.
Huge thanks to Ryder Cowan, Jack Whaley, and TJ Ford for joining us to break down this upcoming Walker Cup of La Hinch and take a look at the course. And I cannot wait to get into the competition. Smiley, we have to run through each of these teams so you kind of know which familiar faces they're going to be out there, which matchups you want to see. We'll get to those rosters, then we'll kind of break down what we think we're going to see, maybe make some predictions for this Walker Cup. So let's start with the American side. Preston Stout, Tyler Watts, Ethan Fang, Miles Russell, Josiah Gilbert, William Jennings, Ryder Cowan, Kihei Kina, Jay Ling Jr., and Stuart Hagestad. Do you want to stop there for some analysis? You want to go ahead and read off the GB and I side? All right, let's keep it rolling. On the GB and I side, you have Tyler Weaver, Luke Poulter, Niall Shields-Donegan, Elliot Baker, Connor Graham, Stuart Grand. I think I'm saying his last name right, Grand. Jack Whaley, Sam Easterbrook, Ben Bolton, and Josh Hill. There you have it, Smiley.
I think it's coming home.
You think it's coming home? I love that. That's the our English audiences, they might not love that as much, but I see what you did there.
I think I agree with TJ. I think this is a team that can get it done. That's a strong GB&I team.
Oh, you think the GB&I team's going to win?
No, it's coming home.
I thought you were doing like a deeply ironic American.
No, I can see what you
reverse on the. Yeah, it's coming home. Wow.
I can
okay.
see what you mean it there. Just to give you like a little bit of like result history of kind of what has happened in the Walker Cup over the last decade, give or take. Cypress Point last year was a blowout. They're getting it back on what would be the odd every odd year, I believe, is why they went back to back years, kind of making up for the COVID missed year. So Cypress, it was a 17-9 win for the U.S. The year prior, or 2 years prior, at St. Andrews, United States won by 3. So there was a blowout at Cypress, kind of close to St. Andrews. Seminole was very, very close, 14-12, U.S. won. Royal Liverpool, U.S. won by 5. Los Angeles, U.S. won by 8. And then Royal Witham, actually the GB and I, were out the U.S. that week. National Golf Links, I remember that year being Bobby, Corey. I believe JT was on that team. They wore out that team, won by 8. And then GB and I won the prior year, won by 2. So when you kind of look at that, United States has been dominant, and you can understand why when you look at all these young guys that have been on the PGA Tour, but then also reminding people that the Walker Cup and the Ryder Cup are not the same. The Walker Cup is just Great Britain and Ireland, where the Ryder Cup is Europe. So you're able to draw from Sweden, you're able to draw from all like Spain, all these different countries that aren't Great Britain and Ireland, which have plenty of great talented players. But I think the depth and just the overall top end talent that we've produced out of the States has just kind of overwhelmed, it seems like, these GB and I teams, especially with the star power, some of these young Americans. And you look at this young American team, I think that's the best way to describe it. I think they are young. You got some veteran type players like Stuart Hagestad, who's played in what is this, his fifth Walker Cup. He's you can pretty much just shoo him in as the mid-am guy on this team. But you got some young guys that don't have maybe quite as much experience, where I think you look at the GB and I team and you start talking about some of those names and you're like, oh, I recognize that name. That guy's been playing college for a while. And I think there's a little bit more of that on the GB and I team, where you look at the U.S. team, it's like you got a lot of really, really good young up-and-coming players, but then also players that are playing on their first team.
I think GB and I definitely needs Tyler Weaver to be healthy, and he's missed out on, you know, some stuff recently because he's not been in full health. And I don't know where he stands right now or who they have lined up as an alternate, but he is, you know, the highest ranked player on that team. So you hope that he's healthy so we can get an interesting competition. I think that this competition, watching it live at Cyprus last year, was obviously extremely cool, but also informative, because I felt like there were parallels to the Ryder Cup at Bethpage in that the gap is always in, or the difference maker is always singles. And just the American side, it's just a lot of firepower to deal with. But playing in some of these different, you know, formats, you know, especially when you're talking about foursomes in the morning, that being a format that traditionally the European sides of the Ryder Cup have been much better in, and then just watching that come to life at Cyprus last year, like I just felt like the level of creativity from the GB and I side, the way they were using slopes and hitting shots that weren't just stock TrackMan shots, I
the U.S. wore them out in singles, man. It was they were just so dominant when they got in singles, because GB and I think they got off to a 3-1 start for the competition.
They did
in that morning foursomes, and then the rest of the week they only scored what was it, 6 more points in the 3 remaining sessions. So it's a fun format, you know, getting singles every day, right? Like, cause it's only 2 days. You get foursomes in the morning, then singles, then you get best ball, then singles. Is that right?
No, it's alt shot for both mornings. Morning foursomes. It's yeah, it's foursomes singles. I believe.
Okay, so you never get best. You never get the points. Best ball.
Yeah,
you
never get the best ball. Okay. Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I mean, I don't know if you agree with my take. I mean, I think it's you could probably make a line. If you were going to set a line, you would probably put the United States as a -130 favorite. I think that's probably where I'd probably price it. I don't know. What do you think?
That's actually a good question. Do you think there are odds out there in the Walker Cup? Surely there are.
I bet.
Okay. So you're saying -130.
Yeah.
For the U.S. side.
I could see it being up to -160, but I would say -130 would be the spot where I would take my guess. And if it's -130, that means that means the books got they like the home field for.
See, they got these fractional odds, and I'm like, can you just put this in American for me? All right. This is a whole mess. I'm seeing 2-1. Four to nine to 8-15, and I don't want to do math.
Good.
Yeah, that doesn't do us any good.
All right,
not a math spot.
y'all make sure you comment if you actually can find the price.
Just translate that for us. That's not really our game. I mean, I do think the Americans win again. I think it's probably closer here than it has been for some of these past years. I think GB and I has a much greater chance this year, to your point, than they have had in past years, given the experience. And even, like, I think it's Connor Graham, who's been on two of these teams now, and he's 19 years old. You know, it's pretty cool. And he took, I think it was,
man.
God, he played Mason Howell on Sunday. I'm trying to remember Sunday singles was last year, but he took maybe it was Jackson Coivin, whoever it was a close singles match right to the very end. So I think that you could get a lot of those here, and maybe, but it'll be interesting to see how this course plays, because I think that was part of the preview where Irish courses don't have as much bounce and roll in the front as like a proper Scottish links course has. So a lot of these kids are playing in the States for college. I look at
the United States team. Like, who was on the team at Cyprus? I mean, it was Fang, I think, was on the team. Like, yep. I think he made it. The only other player Stout and Hagestad. That's it.
So and Mason Howe.
Mason's not on the team.
Oh, it's Mason Howe. I just read the whole team and I immediately forgot that. All right, Smiley, 26 points available. What is your final score prediction for this Walker Cup?
Speaking of odds, I think you could set odds on like whether I can add things up to 26 right now.
It's the hardest part of this whole thing.
Yeah, give me, let's see. I'm going to go 14.5 to,
you can do it.
No, I can't.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
I think it's 11.5.
You did it.
I'm going GB and I.
You go GB and I, 14.5 and 11.5. All right, I'm gonna go 14-12 USA.
Okay. All right.
There you have it.
Means we should have a good one, folks.
Means we should have a good one.
That's what the sharps are thinking.
That's what the math experts are saying on the Smiley Show. They've really crunched.
That's right.
They've crunched the numbers. And they still haven't figured out much about those very numbers. So that's it for the Walker Cup preview. Hope you enjoy it this weekend on the Golf Channel. Saturday, September 5th to Sunday, September 6th, starting about 3:30 a.m. going to early afternoon. So
that's right.
Wherever you are, enjoy it, and we'll talk to you back here very soon.
We'll see you next week on the Golf Channel. This has been The Smiley Show.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our first time fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the